Hi, Richard Lachman. Welcome to KABU.
Good to be with you, Bill.
Richard Lachman teaches sociology at the University of Albany and the State University of New York. He's an activist in the Sunrise Movement, works also with the Democratic Socialists of America, the DSA. He's the author of First Class Passengers and a Sinking Ship, Elite Politics and the Decline of Great Powers. He's also written a great deal on strategy to stop climate change, including how to defeat the fossil fuel industry. That's in The Nation magazine. Also, how climate change will affect socialist strategy. That's in the Democratic Socialist, and sustainable jobs and a sustainable environment through a Green New Deal. That's in a forthcoming book. These articles are really good and useful in discussing the two big and necessary struggles that have to be waged by climate action forces to maintain a livable, habitable planet. The first is to defeat the fossil fuel industry, coal, oil, natural gas. The second is to defeat the investor-owned utilities like PGE and Pacific Power here in Oregon, who are trying to maintain their big centralized and militarized control of electric energy and its big regular profits. So, Richard Lachman, let's begin with the effort to stop the fossil fuel industry and its extraction and its transport by either rail or pipeline, also to stop its refining and its shipping, and to show that it is a dying industry and a very risky investment. The Stop Fossil Fuel movement has had big recent victories, including in Oregon, and including very unexpectedly from the Biden administration. Tell us the story.
Well, the weak point for the fossil fuel industry is that they have to transport the oil, coal, and natural gas. And the most efficient and cheapest way to do that is with huge pipelines, and those pipelines travel through government lands, through private lands, and through native reservations. And each of these provide opportunities to file court suits, conduct sit-ins, and all of these can slow down and recently in a number of cases stop these pipelines. And what's most heartening is that two completed pipelines, the Dakota Access Pipeline in North Dakota and the Tesoro High Plains Pipeline, also in North Dakota, have been stopped. And these are completed pipelines, and as a result of, in the case of Dakota Access, a court case, in the case of the Tesoro one, action by the Bureau of Indian Affairs that found that the pipeline trespassed on Native lands, these pipelines have been shut down. And what that means is, for capitalist investors, these sorts of projects are highly risky. They can go through the whole process, get permits approved, have it built, and then the pipeline can't operate and their investment gets wiped out. And so these sorts of actions are leading banks and other sorts of investors to decide that fossil fuels is not a good place to put money. And of course, if they don't invest in it, the industry will come to a halt. There won't be new pipelines, and there won't be drilling.
The divestment movement that especially Bill McKibben has been pushing has also had some effect on investment in the fossil fuel industry. It makes other investors nervous that too many states and cities and even investment organizations, hedge funds and the rest of them, don't invest. The loans that they give them will also never pay off. Is the divestment movement still operating fairly successfully?
Still operating, and everything helps. You can make an industry look disreputable so that various prominent capitalists or university endowments and religious endowments won't invest in these industries, will reduce the willingness of other people to invest in it, you know, either because it looks like an immoral industry. We saw that happen to some degree with tobacco or investments in South Africa during the apartheid era. That's helpful, but in the end, I think, you know, the most effective tactic is to make these sorts of investments unreliable. And so sit-ins in North Dakota, court suits, have been the most effective, because there's nothing that scares off investors more than the thought that they can put money in and they'll never get it back. I mean, they're certainly used to, you know, having markets do badly for a while so they have a lower return, but the thought of building a facility and never having it operate and being totally wiped out is frightening for any investor. And the way to do that is through all these methods of pressure, sit-ins, court suits, and also electoral politics. Biden, the minute he came in, signed an executive order revoking the permit for the Dakota Access Pipeline. And
that was a surprise, wasn't it? I mean, people expected Biden to play corporate and talk about clean energy. The support is another enormous warning to investors to stop putting money into fossil fuels.
Yeah, it's a result of all the efforts during this campaign to put climate change at the center, and many people mobilized on this. And so while Biden didn't make any specific promise on Dakota Access, he said that he thought climate change was a major issue, and this is a way that he could express that. Certainly, you know, his short record as president-elect and president is not entirely positive. One of the key aides he appointed is a former congressman named Cedric Richmond, who was in he was from Louisiana. Not so surprisingly, he was a big supporter of fossil fuels and got massive campaign contributions from the fossil fuel industry. We can't take for granted that Biden's going to do the right thing on every issue, but you know, it now appears he's going to do the right thing on more and more because he's under pressure from people who've mobilized.
Hi, folks. Bill Resnick here for the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm talking to Richard Lachman, who teaches sociology at the University of Albany, State University of New York. He writes he's active in building the Democratic Socialists of America, the DSA, and in the climate action movement, including the Sunrise. We've just discussed how our struggles to stop the fossil industry has put those fine men and women and profiteers on the defense, and that hopefully to continue to make it possible to retain a livable planet. In the second half of this interview, we'll discuss the struggles over the coming energy system based in renewable, mostly sun and wind energy, what's going to replace, what has to replace the fossil fuel industry. Richard Lachman, tell us about that struggle. It's between, of course, the investor-owned utilities on the one side who want to control the power and profits of their industry as it exists now, and electricity is going to become more important in our future. It has to power transportation, except maybe walking and biking. Also, agriculture, industrial production, construction, heating and cooling. It has to become electric. So tell us about that struggle between the community energy forces and those advocating, like folks at this radio station, including myself, local community energy.
Well, the goal is to have electricity produced entirely by renewable sources, you know, mainly solar and wind. And there are basically two ways to do that. One is to build, you know, giant windmills and giant solar farms, which will require massive investments, and, you know, for the for-profit utilities either to build and own these themselves or to enter into business arrangements with other capitalists who will set this up. And that's the style of business that these huge utilities are used to and that they're moving ahead on, and they're getting help in accomplishing that through government regulation and to some extent government subsidies. You know, there's talk of making a so-called smart grid a central piece of a multi-trillion-dollar infrastructure bill that President Biden is planning to propose in the spring. The other way to do that is to have it be much more decentralized, to have individuals or community groups put solar panels up on buildings and community sites, to build smaller windmills and to create local networks of distributing the electricity from that. And the utilities don't like that because it would cut them out. You know, it's a non-capitalist way of doing it. Nobody's going to profit from that. And so the utilities and other investors are going to try to resist that. There are all sorts of wonderful things about renewable energy. You know, one of them beyond that it can save our planet is that it, in fact, is more efficient if it's done in a decentralized way. You know, if you're just looking at this in terms of efficiency and not thinking about the harms of capitalism or the environment, it's just, you know, cheaper and easier to do this on a local basis. And so, you know, we that argument for having decentralized renewable energy on our side, in addition to the arguments of fairness and justice.
Yeah, and it also doesn't need the big grid. It needs confederation, it needs cooperation and storage regionally and with adjacent areas. It needs some coordination at the national level. But one thing it doesn't need is some vast, you pointed out, multi-trillion dollar grid that is in fact very unreliable. One of my favorite lines is the big grid is just as reliable as its most vulnerable pylon, and it also starts fires, as in California. It's very unreliable and not resilient. The big utilities just need those to maintain their centralized systems. They really can't operate on a local basis with sort of confederated and coordinated efforts. The Biden administration, it seems to me, with Al Gore at the lead, maybe, and Kerry, Al Gore is, although he's changed his tune, he now talks about community energy as well, but they talk about, as you call the so-called smart grid. You're expecting them, the Biden administration, to support that building of a smart grid, go to Congress for God knows what, loan guarantees and all the rest that would make it possible.
Yeah, I think they're definitely going to do that. And if they were here, I think their response to us would be, we need to do everything, that we have to get away from fossil fuels as quickly as possible, and it won't be feasible to create enough community-based green energy fast enough to prevent catastrophic global warming. And at the same time as we're building community green energy, we're also going to have to give money to the big utilities and let them build a smart grid and encourage investors to construct gigantic solar farms and windmills. It's not an irrational argument. That you can see, you know, the appeal of it, and you know, my guess is it's probably going to win the day, but you know, that doesn't mean we should give up. We should be pushing as well for community-based green energy, and if we can construct enough of that, we can demonstrate it's more reliable, it's cheaper, it's in fact more efficient, and over time, we'll be able to undermine the large utilities.
Yeah, in fact, their system is going to take forever to build out. Unless, of course, they patch in their legislation, no environmental impact statements are required. It's such a great emergency that the industry, the IOUs, can do whatever they want in order to build out this grid to save humanity. That's probably going to be another one of their arguments. But still, it's going to take a huge amount of time to build out this big grid. You know, because it needs specialized labor, it needs specialized parts, it needs specialized design. It's got to go over rivers through forests. They have to cut a huge swaths out of the forest in order to make sure that the grid doesn't start a fire or burn down in the fire. Even the labor, how do you house people? Local energy can be constructed right off the shelf by anybody, any contractor who can build a house or remodel a kitchen or even a bathroom. It's very low tech, actually, although the high tech is in manufacturing the turbines, the smaller turbines, and the panels. But that's been solved. It seems to me if we can just demonstrate in cities that it works, and they're stuck in all of the problems that they're going to face with their big grid and big remote installations, it could well be that ultimately the cities and counties and the federal and the people demanding the build-out of local energy. I think that's a possible scenario.
Yeah, I agree. And it doesn't require centralized control. You know, if the federal government offers tax breaks or subsidies for people to install solar panels on their homes, it would create enormous demand. You know, people would do it. And as you pointed out, ordinary building contractors can install much of that. You don't need people who are specialized in this sort of work to do it. You know, the hard work of developing cheap solar panels and windmills that are of a small enough size that they can be installed in communities has already been done. And now the cost of battery storage has come way down. So, you know, one of the big problems of, while there isn't much wind in some places or it isn't sunny all the time, it can be dealt with by installing batteries.
It seems to me that now the struggle is going on all over the country. The investor-owned utilities are attempting to stop local energy. They've really succeeded in Oregon, much less in Washington, and that is the utilities have succeeded in Oregon. They really are powerful in the Portland City Council, and they donate a lot of money. They're very powerful here in Oregon. There was a feed-in tariff that they failed in their complacency to stop when it was enacted about 15 years ago. That is, people could put solar panels on their home and sell the excess energy that they didn't use at a decent price to the utilities. And they stopped it. They just legislated it. They made themselves the gatekeeper for all of that, and as a gatekeeper, they closed the gate. And nobody's been able to open that gate for local energy. It's really a scandal. Oregon is not a green state, almost in any way, not even in timbering. It's way behind California in saving its forests. Clear cutting is going on all over and destroying rural communities because they're milling the stuff elsewhere, and lumbering is all mechanical. Richard Lachman, it seems to me as though in every state, and including now in Oregon, the forces of community energy are strengthening. And we discussed earlier the real possibilities that if we show that community energy works, demonstration projects, maybe even some model cities money could be extracted from the Biden administration by the Congressional Progressive Caucus. They have to cooperate with Biden if he's going to win anything. It seems to me that we can, in fact, show people the great virtues of local energy in order to keep the planet livable.
I think we can take heart from the successes of opposition to pipelines and see that as a model for our strategy, that we organize locally. We try to be as practical as we can to find weak points in the opposition and to hold up a model of, you know, different ways to create the energy that we need to live. And just as we can defeat pipelines and fracking, similarly we can attack the for-profit utilities and, you know, create models of much more efficient, locally based green energy.
Yeah, you know, it's happening in Oregon now. The forces for clean local energy have organized and revived. One victory was in Portland, where the Portland Clean Energy Fund was created through an initiative, not through the city council. They would never have done it, liberals as they are, through an initiative that imposed taxes on the biggest companies in Oregon to build out local supplies of energy, although the tax would only raise $50 million a year. That's a drop in the bucket. But it's something. It's going to do important things. Just as important, Very recently, a clean energy alliance is formed. Its website is OregonCleanEnergy.org, and it's now pushing the legislature for a number of bills that would jumpstart the local community energy in this state. Unfortunately, not including a feed-in tariff, which would really do the job. Richard Lachman, I think there are possibilities all over the country, and more people will read your stuff and begin to realize that from on the ground successes that we can, in fact, stop climate change. Richard Lachman, thanks a lot for talking to us.
It was a pleasure, Bill. Thanks so much.
So long.